Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will. Thank you.
your soul, lots of love, without a thought of giving, unselfishly, you and me.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
But you say, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No. Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Hello, my name is Burke Hedges, author of the best-selling book, The Parable of the Pipeline. I open my book with a story about Pablo and Bruno, who take two very different paths in their quest for financial independence. What you're about to see is the delightful animated story of their adventure. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy the life-changing lessons in The Parable of the Pipeline.
Far away, in a small village, near a beautiful valley, lived two friends, Pablo and Bruno. They were both young and dreamed of a better life for themselves. They'd often discussed their dreams about how they would become the most successful men in the village. They weren't afraid of hard work, and they searched for opportunities to help realize their goals and achieve their dreams. One day, an opportunity presented itself. The mayor of the village decided to hire two people to bring water from a spring up on the mountain, across the valley, back down to the village. They were to be paid based on the amount of water delivered to the village. Bruno and Pablo enthusiastically got to work. Every day, from morning till evening, they carried buckets to and from the spring. They worked hard, carrying water to the village. In the evening, they'd return home with their day's wages. Bruno was satisfied with his work and the money he earned. He was sure that with this work, he could achieve his dreams. Bruno thought that to increase his wages, he could use bigger buckets to bring more water each trip. He believed with a larger income, he would soon be able to buy a cow and the house that he dreamed about. Now, Pablo was not satisfied. At the end of the day, his back and hands ached, and he was exhausted. He was looking for an easier way to earn more. One day, an idea occurred to Pablo. He imagined building a pipeline to deliver the water from the mountain spring to the village. With this pipeline, he could get more water to the village without carrying buckets back and forth from the spring to the village. Soon, he got very excited about his idea and began to plan. Pablo, of course, shared his idea with his friend Bruno and asked him to join with him to work on and help build the pipeline. Bruno thought the idea was crazy. All Bruno could think about was what his money could buy today and how to get it quicker. He felt that building a pipeline would slow him down and delay him in achieving his goals. Instead, Bruno got bigger buckets and went more often back and forth fetching water. He was sure that with this method, he could make more money. Pablo decided to build the pipeline on his own. He understood that it would not be easy to build, and it would take time to complete the pipeline. Pablo knew that it could take several years to finish, but he set his mind on his goal. Every day, he worked and carried water like before. But on weekends and during his spare time, he worked hard to dig in the rocky soil and build his pipeline. In the first month, there was little to show for his work. Bruno and the villagers laughed and teased him. They called him Pablo the Pipeline Man. During this time, Bruno's income doubled. He already bought a cow and a bigger house. His lifestyle changed. He now spent time after work in the bar, enjoying his hard-earned wages from delivering water. What Bruno didn't realize was that his body was starting to stoop from carrying the heavy buckets every day. His face looked worn and his body tired. Soon, he began to carry less and less water due to the wear and tear on his body. Month after month, Pablo worked. Soon a year passed, and then a second year. Finally, Pablo finished his pipeline. He now used his pipeline to deliver water to the village. Instead of carrying buckets, Pablo was now earning more money than ever before. The water continued flowing to the village while Pablo wasn't working. While he slept and ate, the water flowed. Pablo was happy and proud of his insight, persistence, and hard work. Now his income flowed as long as the water flowed through his pipeline. The story of Bruno and Pablo is a reflection of life. Their jobs symbolize what most people do to earn money. Bruno gets his money using buckets. He goes back and forth, carrying his buckets from the spring to the village in exchange for money. To increase his income, he either has to go more frequently to the spring or to use larger buckets. It's common in real life to increase our income by working harder. For example, working overtime or getting a second job. We also increase the size of our buckets by accepting a higher paying position, which often includes spending more time on the job. Most of us exchange time for money like Bruno. We know that every person has only 24 hours in the day and that it's not possible to use all our time to work. The most difficult time comes when we can no longer exchange time for money due to age, health, or other reasons. Then our income stops. Now let's review what Pablo did. Very wisely, Pablo did not exchange all of his time for limited income, but he used some of his time to build a pipeline. He knew that the pipeline would bring ongoing income as long as the water flowed. An ongoing income that multiplied the time he worked each day. Pablo knew that someday, maybe because of age or health, he would no longer be able to exchange his available time for money. Pablo knew that if he could make his idea of a pipeline work, then he only has to do the hard work of building the pipeline. After the pipeline was completed, Pablo was able to monitor and maintain the flow of water to ensure that his income will continue. Pablo has shown us that to earn an income, we don't always have to directly exchange time for money. There really are better ways. How about you? Are you still like Bruno, who directly exchanges time for money? Or do you want to be like Pablo, building and maintaining a pipeline for ongoing income? If you are interested in the idea of building your own pipeline, contact the person who lent you this presentation. You can start building your pipeline today.
Back in the year 1843, a man was born who, during his lifetime, was to have a profound effect on literally millions of people. His name was Russell Herman Conwell. He became a lawyer, then a newspaper editor, and finally a clergyman in 1881. It was during this latter period that an incident occurred which was to change his life and the lives of countless others. One day a group of boys came to Dr. Conwell at his church and asked him if he would be willing to instruct them in college courses. They wanted a college education but lacked the money to attend. He told them he'd do all he could, and as the boys left, a thought, an idea began forming in Dr. Conwell's mind. He asked himself, why couldn't there be a fine college for poor but deserving young men? Here was a great idea, and he went to work on it at once. Almost single-handedly, Dr. Conwell raised between $6 and $8 million with which he founded the now well-known Temple University of Philadelphia. It was how he raised this money that I want to tell you about. He raised the money by giving lectures all over the country, more than 6,000 of them, and in each he told a story called Acres of Diamonds. This was a true story which had affected him very deeply, just as it affected his audiences. It was the story of a farmer who had settled in Africa. This farmer had heard the exciting stories of other African settlers who had made millions by discovering diamond mines. Realizing the African continent was rich in diamonds, the farmer could hardly wait to sell his farm and search for diamonds himself. He spent the rest of his life wandering the vast African continent, searching for the gleaming gems which brought such high prices on the markets of the world, but without success. Finally, in a sudden fit of despondency, broke and desperate, as I remember the story, he threw himself into a river and drowned. During this time, the man who had bought his farm one day found a large and unusual stone in the stream which cut through the property. It turned out to be a great diamond of enormous value, and then he discovered that his farm was covered with them. It was to become one of the world's richest diamond mines. Now, the first farmer had owned literally acres of diamonds, but had sold them for practically nothing in order to look for them elsewhere. If he had only taken the time and study to know what diamonds looked like in their rough state, and had first thoroughly explored the land he had owned, he would have had the millions he sought, right on the land he had been living upon. What so profoundly affected Dr. Conwell, and subsequently thousands of others, was the obvious fact that each of us is, at this moment, standing in the middle of his own acres of diamonds. If we will only have the wisdom and patience to intelligently and effectively explore the work in which we are now engaged, we will usually find that it contains the riches we seek, whether they be financial or intangible or both. Before we go running off to what we think are greener pastures, let's make sure that our own is not just as green, or perhaps even greener. While we're looking at other pastures, other people are looking at ours. There's nothing more pitiful to my mind than the person who wastes his life running from one thing to another, like the first farmer, forever looking for the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, and never staying with one thing long enough to find it. For no matter what your goal may be, the road to it can be found somewhere in the work in which you now find yourself. It wasn't until he was completely paralyzed, for example, and was forced to reach into the resources of his mind, that a Wisconsin farmer got the idea of producing exceptionally good meat products on his farm, and one of the country's largest meatpacking companies was born. His farm contained acres of diamonds, too. He had just never seen them before. A paper salesman found a dirty drinking glass in his hotel room and gave his company the idea of manufacturing paper cups, an idea that solved his financial problems for life. An insurance man got the idea of going back to all the people in his files and really working with them, serving them the way they should be served. That year, he wrote an additional $700,000 of insurance, made the million-dollar round table, and found he no longer had to approach cold prospects. That by working with the people he had already sold and on their referrals, he had acres of diamonds right in his filing cabinet. A man out west amassed a fortune with a single small gas station. In the beginning, when things were tough, he would ask himself each morning, what can I do to increase my service to my customers? He still asks that question of himself each morning when he gets up, and while he could have retired years ago a wealthy man, he continues to dominate the business in his area by thinking of new and better ways to be of service. Do you know what the so-called average man would have done in this last case? He would have been worried about how bad business was, because in the beginning my friend had a hard time just feeding his family. When one day a man would have driven in the station in a big, shiny car. This average man, seeing the wealthy customer, would have said to himself, I ought to be in his business instead of mine. You see, the average man believes some businesses are better than others, instead of realizing the truth that there are no bad businesses. There are just those people who do not know enough to see the opportunities in the work they're in. Jobs don't have futures. People do. No matter what our work happens to be, it's our business. We're its manager. If we can see no future or opportunity in it, it isn't because it's not there, but only because we can't see it. One time another farmer poked a tiny pumpkin into an empty 1 gallon jug. The pumpkin grew until it completely filled the jug and could grow no more. When it was ripe, the farmer broke the glass jug and had a pumpkin which had assumed the jug's exact shape. In life, each of us does a similar thing. We poke ourselves into jugs of our own deciding, and we can grow no larger. But let's be mature enough to realize that it is we who do the poking, not the job, nor the company, nor the territory, nor the economy, nor the times. We do it. We should dispense with limitations and realize there is virtually no limit to our growth and development on the land on which we now find ourselves. Above all, keep this thought in mind as often as you can, on and off the job. Somewhere within the work you are now doing, there lurks an opportunity which will bring you everything you could possibly want for yourself and your family. In closing, here are 12 points to remember. 1. If we will develop the wisdom and patience to intelligently and effectively explore the work in which we are now engaged, we will find it contains the riches, tangible and intangible, we seek. 2. Before we go running off to what we think are greener pastures, let's realize our own pasture is unlimited. 3. That there are no bad jobs, but that it's the way in which we go about our work which makes it good or bad. 4. That we poke ourselves into jugs beyond which we cannot grow. Let's remove the limitations we've set upon ourselves. 5. That only preparation can ensure our taking advantage of the opportunities which will present themselves in the future, opportunities which are around us now. 6. Put your imagination to work on the many ways and means of improving what you're now doing. 7. Learn all you can about your job, your company, and your industry. 8. Since there's no limit to the growth of your industry, it must follow there is similarly no limit on your growth potential within that industry. 9. Our dynamic and growing economy needs and will well reward the uncommon man who seeks a place in this growth. 10. Begin to build your library of reference material pertaining to your company, industry, job, and on how to better serve and get along with people. 11. Set aside an hour a day for this study and research. And 12, remember the story of the Acres of Diamonds. Zero Nightingale, thank you.
Okay. I was waiting for my phone to reboot. Today's jump-off title is Making Money versus Earning Money. And we'll go to... we want to point out some distinctions. There is a difference between earning money and making money. And the audio that we played with Pablo and Bruno. Bruno, once again, both of them had a water supply business. Okay. And they both at first were you know, hauling their buckets, empty buckets, to the river to fetch water in those buckets and bring them back to the village and stuff. All right. And that's what we would call earning money. Earning money. It's not making money, but it's earning money. All right. So Pablo decided, as per in the video, audio that you heard, he decided, you know what, it's got to be an easier way to do this. So he decided to build a bridge or a water system, which the water would go from the stream or the river into the village. Now, the building of that bridge was him making money. Making money. Another example would be, and here's another thing, earning money is a slower process. Example, if you have, well, let's use Toyota. If you're a factory worker that works for Toyota, I don't know what they get paid by it. Let's put the wage out there, $20, $25 an hour. Okay, man, you know what? I'm going to even go up the food chain on this one. Let's say you're a factory worker at Toyota that earns $100 per hour. And you're part of the factory system there. And you work your 8 hours a day, so you earn $800 a day. Most people would say that's good money. All right. And I seriously doubt if they get paid $100 an hour, but I'm just saying. All right. However, Toyota, which is a family-based business, Toyota has a lot of factory workers, and they're able to assemble between the workers, the human workers, and maybe a robot here or there. They're able to assemble 20 cars per minute. So, and let's say it costs them to assemble a Toyota truck or whatever, motor vehicle. Let's say they're making a profit of, I'm just trying to simplify this, let's say $1,000 per car. $1,000 per car. So times 20 cars in a minute. So $20,000 per minute. You got the factory worker who earns $100 per hour. They net out at $800 a day. However, Toyota earns $20,000 a minute. Within an hour, he's made $1.2 million. Within an 8-hour day, he's made over $9,600 in a shift. And they have three shifts a day. So $800 a day versus over $28 million. If you work it around the shifts using, several people. So the $20 an hour wage earner is earning their money. It's a slower process. Whereas Toyota or any CEO who has a system down and the appropriate teams in place, by making the car, because a typical Toyota might have, car or truck, could have ballpark figures based on a model, maybe 30,000 parts to, a car or a truck. But they're making money. Simplified even further, it doesn't have to be a car, but it can be cupcakes. It could be cookies. It could be... Just find something that you're interested in making and then figure out a system on how to mass produce it. There's more money in profits than in wages. However, everybody's got their own lane, so to speak. Okay, now, all right, let me see. This is January the 4th, 2023. So let's see what's going out there this morning. kind of quiet where I'm at. 309, your mic is open.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning, L.A.?
I can't complain.
It's quiet.
It's the fourth day of the year.
It's quiet around here.
Yeah.
How long has the pig been gone?
Huh?
I said, how long has the pig been gone?
Oh, the pig. Oh, pig's still here.
The pig's still there?
He's sleeping somewhere. Yeah. Pig doesn't
how big
do
is
much, but yeah, it's still on.
How big is he?
What'd you say?
How big is he?
Hog size.
I have to take a picture and send it. It's hog size,
but it doesn't. I'll send you a picture today, later today on. But it's not like an Arnold Ziffel type. It goes in and out of the house. It's not Arnold Ziffel size, but it's. We're basically house trained and always wagging his tail. So, does a lot of sleeping though, but sleeps. I know one night I was trying to get inside the RV and so I was trying to coax it into coming to the RV for the night, but that didn't work and he had dug out a little bed for himself under some bushes, so he was good for the whole night. So, but man, basically, it's a low maintenance pig. I'll put it that way.
That's funny. There ain't nothing wrong with that, though. It's just cool.
right. Justin
said he wouldn't get in the RV with you, and he made his own bed.
Yeah, made it outside. So. He was happy to do that.
Right. So what was the topic that we started out the day with here?
Making money versus earning money. So, for instance, and I put it out there because essentially people who might have a financial problem, if they would find something to make. Okay, make it and sell. Like, in other words, if they came to somebody like you and say, look, let me give a drastic scenario. So, most people, when they need extra money, they might get a part-time job, work a second job, a third job, which I would call that earning money, and you're making it slow. However, if you come to somebody like you, and Randy Jones, they make, three to five tiny houses a day. They had to be tiny houses. I gave one example on here, Mignon Francois. And Mignon was a mother of seven children, or is a mother of seven children still to this day. Seven children. And her house, she was facing foreclosure. Her house was in foreclosure. And the water and the electricity was shut off on the same day. So, and she only had $5 on this particular day to feed the family. And sometimes they didn't eat until 10 o'clock at night. So, an opportunity to make money, now mind you, I didn't say earn money, but make money came to her and she took advantage of it. And how she made money was, what happened was the realtor that was having an open house in the neighborhood said, look, if you bake some of those cupcakes, I would like some of those cupcakes that you bake because they had an open house in this neighborhood, this afternoon or whatever. So Mignon took her grandmother's recipe for cupcakes, and I guess she went to some of the neighbors or whatever where she had some social capital and used those facilities to bake. She baked 60 cupcakes. She sold them for $1 a piece to the realtor because the realtor told her up front, I'll pay you for a dollar for each one. And she didn't give her a deposit. Mignon had to finance whatever she could out of that $5. So I guess she went to the dollar store, Dollar General, someplace like that. Anyway, so she made the cupcakes, and she made $60, took $5 out to feed her family for that night. But she made, now this is making money. Making money is, it happens dramatically faster than earning money and earning a wage. But she turned the $5 into $60. Then she turned, within that week, she turned the $60 into $600. And then she kept up that process until she had enough money to turn back on the water, the electricity, and get the house out of foreclosure, which had to be thousands of dollars. But she did it because she made money by making cupcakes. Randy Jones, at least a teeny bit I know about his backstory, is, you know, he started making or building or manufacturing or something, whatever you want to call it, tiny houses. So if a person, whatever situation that you're in, find something. It doesn't have to be as big as a tiny house. Well, maybe as small as a tiny house. It doesn't have to be cupcakes, but find something to make and start, figure out a way to make them where you can make several in a day or several in a matter of hours. Could be anything. Cookies, cupcakes, cakes, tiny houses, you know, clothes, anything you can think of. So that was a jump off topic, Chris. Greenhouses, anything. And we shall have, along with our 99, matter of fact, it'll be part of our 99 Homes Work Retreats, a section on making money. And we'll bring out, because there's the distinction between making money and earning money. Although most people just interchange those two, make and earn it, you know. But they're not the same. They're different. So that's the story on that. And let's see. Have another call here. 703. Your mic is open.
Hey, L.A., this is Carlos. Hey, Chris, how you guys doing?
Happy New Year, Carlos.
Happy New Year, brother.
Chris. Yeah, great topic, making versus earning money. You know, many people in the U.S. talk about capitalism and wanting to be a capitalist. But most people are actually wage workers, which is
right.
Not capitalism. You know, capitalism is entrepreneurism, starting your own company. I started my law firm in 2010 after getting 8 days' notice at the firm that I was working at. And at the firm I was working at, I was earning money because they were giving me a percentage of what I billed. So I guess maybe that's in between. You know, straight salary versus getting, you know, a piece of the pie. But I had 8 days' notice because I told one partner where he could go and ended up launching my own firm because of that. And it was the most difficult thing I've ever done in my entire life. When I launched mm-hmm. it, I had no clients. Kids in college, you know, mortgage, everything. And I was going to Finland with very little money in my bank account. But Finland, I gave some lectures on intellectual property law. I landed some clients in Finland, and that launched my law firm. So I guess now I would say I'm making money rather than earning it, although I do have to work. You know, I write patent applications and do other things within the firm. But I guess it is more like making money, because we do have a lot of things that are fixed fee, which we just charge on a flat rate, which I can get. I have my youngest assisting me, and she's able to generate money for the firm. I pay her $20 an hour to work here, and she's able to generate well over that billing clients. But it's very difficult being self-employed, but thank you. That's my little stick on earning versus making money.
Well, yeah, because an idea, which is intellectual property, many people have to do a combination of the two. You know, you might have to earn to make the idea come into fruition. And, I'm sure Mr. Toyota, he does some type of, just depends on how you sketch, what task you're doing and how you're, what's your business model, so to speak. So, but your greenhouse, if those are mass produced and sold, each time you put together a greenhouse for profit, that's the greenhouse is, well, let me break it down this way. There are three fundamental types of money. There's commodity money, there's representative money, and there's fiat money. Now, when most people think of money, they're speaking about fiat money. That's legal tender, and that's something that has been produced by, let's say, a national government. In the United States, we have the United States dollar. That's fiat currency. That's fiat money. The euro in various European countries, and I guess Finland might be on a euro too. That's fiat money. And fiat money has been known historically to go down in value due to, I guess, partly because of inflation. Like, I know of a woman in Germany. She's got to be in her 80s, I guess. And she's experienced in her lifetime three different currencies. Reichsmarks. Then that went out, because they had to carry around. I mean, they were buying like a loaf of bread with a milk wheelbarrow full of Reichsmarks or whatever. So she went from Reichsmarks. Then the country of Germany went to Deutschmarks. And then now Germany's on the euro. All right. The United States dollar today, although current more strong than many other legal tenders around the globe, a dollar today buys dramatically less than it did 30 years ago. Definitely 50 years ago, even going back 100 years ago. So that's fiat money, the U.S. dollar or euro or pesos or whatever country that you might be in. The next type of money would be representative money. And let's say that could be something like an IOU. Let's say some kids on the playground, I need a dollar to get a dollar burger off the dollar menu. So one of the kids, they might be an 8th or 10th grader. A 3rd grader. All right. So I got a dollar so you can get whatever. So they might write out a script and it's IOU. IOU so-and-so $1 or whatever. So that's representative money. But also T-bills, stocks, bonds, certificates of deposit, those are all representative money. Also gold and silver, they represent money. All right. And then there's commodity money. Now, commodity money is, it could be a greenhouse. It could be a shed. It could be a tiny house. It could be a McDonald's hamburger. It could be a quilt. It could be a pillowcase. Any article of clothing that you want, they're all commodities. Look all around you, all around the house or room that you're sitting in, Everything that you're looking at is a commodity. Now, you can trade that commodity for legal tender of your choice, or you can trade it or exchange for anything that you want. Some people might not want to be paid in legal tender for whatever reason, but they might want to be paid with, I'll give an example of which is the origins of this podcast. It's my house. I was advertising at one time for a person, this is years ago. I was going to rent out the house, I didn't know anybody. You know, you're taking a chance on a stranger. However, I knew a person that they were headed towards a shelter, but I knew them. And at the time, you know, we had a pretty good, you know, relationship between us. So I said, well, look, you can stay at my house rent-free. You just be a house sitter. So in that case, that was the exchange made. I had a peace of mind, at least at that time, that, okay, here's a person that I know that, you know, I'd rather take a chance on this person because I know this person. The relationship of them being a house sitter was more valuable than taking money from a stranger I did not know. And that arrangement worked well for like over 2 years because I was out of the country. So, but commodity money is something that you can actually make or subcontract to make or whatever. And then in this digital age, we have that too. So that was a jump off topic. Other than that, now it's a new year, so anybody who's on the line, press one if you want to join in the conversation. Well, we'll start off with Chris. Now, generally speaking, what's your plan for 2023? Okay, he might not. He's somewhere else. Carlos, what about you? Oh, wait a minute.
Well,
you got
the plan for 2020. Oh, go ahead, Chris.
I think we got somebody other than Chris. But Carlos, you go ahead, and we'll get the other person on the other side of that.
Yeah, I mean, the plan for 2023 is to have an incredible year. We've developed a great team for the greenhouse and tiny house project. We're looking at building a 3,000 square foot greenhouse in Ohio, and then we're also looking at working with LA County to solve multiple problems in LA County with respect to homelessness and other issues, thanks to Chris. So that's the plan for 2023, is having a strong team. You know, I was doing team roles. I don't know if you ever looked at the Belbin team roles. There's 9 different roles that you need on a team, whether any team, to be successful. Some are action-oriented roles. Some are knowledge-oriented roles. And some are, let's see, action, knowledge. I forget the third category, but there's 9 of them all together. And you need all of those in order to have a successful team. And, of course, one team member can have more than one role. And typically it seems like the action-oriented roles are the ones that are missing in most teams. And that's the people that do things. You know, there's lots of knowledge roles and there's lots of people roles. That was the other one, people roles. You know, people are good team players. They're good at coordinating. They're good at introducing. But then the action-oriented roles are the people that actually get things done, you know. And I've been looking at our team, which is made up of around 7 or so people right now, and it looks like we're lacking in the action-oriented roles. And those are critical because those are, you know, it's one thing to talk about stuff and to, to be a good people person, et cetera. But you do need the people that are, you know, looking at the finances and shaping and executing. So we're going to have to look at the team and see if one or more of us can step up into those action-oriented roles so that we can properly execute what we're trying to do. So that's the plan for 2023. Thanks, L.A.
And have you, yeah, I guess, yeah, you have to identify a team, and I guess that's the first action step, at least one of them. Identify a team and then recruit whoever you need to recruit and see what happens.
Yeah, and there's a great video that talked about that. It's the roles are called, I think the guy name is Belvin. It was a female PhD or something that talked about the roles that are needed for a successful startup. Mm-hmm. And there's a video from a professor in London that was talking about a company that had gotten really well funded, but they couldn't make any profit. And he went and investigated the company, and he saw that the company was made up of plants. The plant role is somebody that comes up with ideas. And as it turned out, everybody in the company was an idea person. So, you know, they would have these meetings. They're like, let's do this, and let's do that, and let's do this, and let's do that. And they never got anything done. So he went in and got some other people to come in that could fill the other needed roles, you know, budgeting and executing and, you know, shaping and that kind of stuff, and was able to take that startup and make it successful, you know. So I thought that was a really good lesson. So I figured with the team that we have, the first thing I'm doing is sort of interviewing each person and finding out what roles that they're passionate about. Right, because we want people to be doing what they're passionate about. However, there's things that you may not be passionate about that we need to do anyways. You know, so I'm trying to see where the gaps are in the skill set that we have amongst our 7-person team. And I have one last team member to interview today, and I think he's going to fit the execution, the action taker role. From the discussions I've already had with him, he seems like the type of person that gets things done, if you know what I mean. Make sure
right.
that things get done on time, et cetera, and get executed. And those people appear to be critical and also missing from many teams. So thank you for letting me share that.
Yeah, you do need that person that can help that, you know, put that stuff into motion. And then once you get going with that, things will pan out. Yeah, you only need one architect, and then go from there. 309-434, your mic is open.
Hello.
Good morning.
I think Chris is working. I know he was going to go get some supplies. I don't know if he's back yet or not on the show or not. But I think you might be able to reach out to him. I'm the homeless guy that he was able to help and get off the streets into a hotel room, and we're working. And
as a matter of fact, what are your plans for 2023? You were formerly homeless, so... You got a roof over your head for right now. So what's your next step?
Well, my next process that I'm going through right now, because I'm realizing my problems, I actually set up an appointment for the 16th to go see a primary doctor to get on some medication for mental health. And then as soon as I get everything under control, I'm hoping to hopefully follow Chris around the world, putting up palaces, man, helping him. And that's what I want to do. I mean, that's where my heart, I feel like my heart is leading me to do. And it's just something I'm talking to him about and trying to work on myself at the same time. That way I can, because...
Okay. Well, hold it. Give me your name. Let me put you in my system. What's your first name again?
My name is Joshua.
All right, Joshua.
Hello.
Okay. Joshua, give us your backstory on, if you don't mind, how you became homeless. And then, you know, give us your backstory.
Now, it's going to be the silliest story anybody's ever heard, but I turned 18, or just turned 18, and me and my dad were working the Charleston Bonnaroo, or no, it might have been the Atlanta, something they had going on in Atlanta where me and my dad were cleaning out porta potties and stuff. But anyways, I turned 18 and my stepmom was one of those controlling people, I thought, and I wasn't too happy. So I turned around and looked at her and I said, I'm a grown ass man. And I ran away for a girl. And sooner or later, the girl was like, or a few weeks later, actually, the girl was like, you know what? You're ungrateful. Dropped me off in Cumming, Georgia, and I was homeless there. That's where my homelessness started. And I ended up going to Florida, was homeless down there, was homeless in Fargo, North Dakota. It's because, like, I want to say this. I want to say it's because my mentality, I was a slow learner in school, so I think it probably took a little bit more time for me to mature more than others, because I don't know what it is now or what changed now, because now I just want to work. I don't want to sit around all day not doing anything. I want to move forward and prosper in life. And just sitting there, it wasn't working. And I think I finally matured and I finally met Chris, was out there on his property that the city shut down. And I kept in contact with him and kept asking him. And he was like, I don't think it's something you want to deal with. I said, man, I want to deal with anything, not sleeping on the streets. He was like, all right, I'll bring you in. He brought me into the hotel. I see how crazy it is and how ungrateful the lady is and how unwise she is, but I'm biting my tongue and working with Chris and getting this stuff done. That's my
now,
little backstory.
You mentioned you were in North Dakota, you said, at one time?
Yes, sir.
Man, what time of year were you up in North Dakota? And, man, how did you make it on a day-to-day basis up there? Because they can have some harsh weather up that way in the wintertime.
Well, two of the years I ain't going to really talk about unless you get with Chris and get my number, and that's something that me and you ourselves will talk about. Is something I don't really want to say on live broadcast.
Okay.
Right.
Right
now.
Okay, no,
but,
I understand it.
But the rest of the years I was couch surfing and stuff. And thank goodness I had food stamps to be my best friend, and churches and stuff, handing out sack lunches and everything. That's how I was able to eat.
Okay, hold on. I'm glad you brought it up. Churches. Now, and there's nothing wrong with the sack lunches at all. Did any of these churches have any type of specific? I hate to use the word program, but I can't think of another word. Program to help homeless, like transitional housing, anything like that.
What was the question? Sorry.
Did any of those churches that, you know, particularly the ones that were giving out the sack lunches or meals, did they have anything like transitional housing or classes on carpentry or anything like that?
They didn't have any classes on carpentry or any of the things that we really want and some stuff that we may want to bring there. But they do help people get housing. But I know North Dakota, they're now, when you walk into their shelters, I don't know if anybody else feels this when you walk into a shelter, but you can feel which one that feels like a feels like a jail when you're sitting in there or staying there, and which one you feel like, man, this is home. You know, this is, I can rest here. I don't know if you know what I mean by that, but.
Well, you're taking some positive steps with Chris, so just keep you're on the right track with that. Let's see. Let's go to our next caller here. 262. Your mic is open. Area code 262.
Hey, Rising. How are you, Chris? How are you?
We're doing well.
Happy New Year. Happy
fourth day
third.
Of January 2023.
Happy fourth day, right?
What's the day? Wednesday? Okay.
Yes. So I've just invited Mama Evelyn on. She said she had just woke up. But my focus is working with young people to empower them. You know, we know that the public school system is not teaching things that would help, you know, the average 18 year old to really survive. The basic math, reading, science, okay, that's great, but they also need ways. I think some of the programs that they could implement, you know, teachers create activities. I'm a teacher myself. I teach Spanish and English literacy. However, the financial literacy, some of the activities that teachers implement do help. However, they need to actually be able to apply it to a real life situation, like in their home. Maybe have a 36-cent saving plan, 36 cents a day savings plan, and then do a budget afterwards. Also talking about the credit history, because even for a caller, if, you know, there was an opportunity to go, had there been a way to establish credit. Generally, a lot of people don't know that no credit is good credit. That means that there's nothing bad on your credit report, so it's easy to build from that. So if someone's never had credit cards and things like that, if you never had a credit account, revolving account, then you could easily build by even with a bank account that gives you recognition. And then the bank, after a while, as long as you don't go into the negative and things like that, the bank will offer credit cards and things like that. The banks do have housing programs as well. So just the encouraging thing is that Chris has this program where he's working with individuals of all ages. I heard youth yesterday. And I did visit the Grand Ballroom and stop by to see a family of four young ones. The oldest is 10 years old. They were bearing gifts for me. You know, I just thought that was cute. They all ran to hug me because they know, young people know. Well, individuals know when people really care. They can sense it. A lot of times when I'm out sharing resources, people think that, oh, it's too good to be true. What does she want? No, I'm just sharing information. I'm just saying hello. A smile goes a long way. You never know what someone else is going through. So, I just want to commend the young man for taking steps to do the things in life that he so chooses. and thanks for letting me speak.
Yes, sir. Now, you have an event that will be happening in about 28 and 29 days. Give us a rundown on that.
Okay, so it's an educational conference. We're going to cover everything from auto mechanics. Well, we're going to have invited guests who speak for a few minutes. Auto mechanics, electrician, they have an electrician's program. I teach Spanish as a second language. Everybody will have access to that. They'll just go on the schedule and we'll do the classes via Zoom. We also are planning for the largest Spanish class at the Grand Ballroom. It fits 800 people. So, that's going to be interesting. The event will include, you know, some video clips to inspire and encourage and educate. Also, they'll walk away with a packet that will share resources from the various vendors and resources around the Chicago metropolitan area, Wisconsin. And so I'm doing some networking so that we can have resources or at least somewhat like a call center. So currently my website, if you Google Reba the Teacher, R-E-B-A the Teacher, my website will pop up and it's RebaLaMaestra.com. But the event is a culmination of things that we've been doing throughout the years, and we'll just bring in different organizations, including Chris's organization, under one roof. Even some people will be streaming in to just speak on video. This is something that I've been doing in different states as a Title I parent educator. So once again, funds are in public schools, and a lot of people don't know that funds are in public schools to help individuals to get, it was implemented by President Al Eisenhower. So Title I parents will be at this event as well. We'll have food. My band will perform. Our theme song is Celebrating Your Life, which is a song that I recorded with W.F. Doc. And I like to say who's a friend of Twista, so I'm going to get Twista back out there. I know he doesn't want Twista to steal the spotlight, but we certainly we do a good show together. So, so the phone number to reach us is 773-449-8839, 773-449-8839. And that's the organization is called the Black Youth Metropolis, Inner City Youth, and where we service youth from all over the Chicago and metropolitan area. We're also reaching out to youth, inner city youth. We're reaching out to youth across the nation. So I have great nieces and nephews in Texas and things like that. So we just wanted to have the individuals, the way that I teach my Spanish class, let me give you guys a sense of the way I teach my Spanish classes. I teach my students, my scholars, to teach themselves. So my MO is not to have individuals to continue to come to me for the service because there is a donation requested. But if I empower you to teach yourself, then you also can teach others. That's how you gain the fluency by teaching others. So that's what I wanted to share.
Do you mind if I share something on I'm sorry, I didn't get your name. I apologize. This is Carlos Villamar.
Reba.
I'm working with Chris. I teach intellectual property law, and I'd be happy to stream. I teach young kids, well, teach everybody how to protect innovation. In other words, you know, what are patents, trademarks, and copyrights? I've been teaching in Finland to some of the universities up there. And I do have a bunch of webinars that are online, but I would be more than happy. It's probably too late to get fitted in or whatever, but I would be happy to stream a lecture if it's something that might be interesting to you. Thank you.
Yeah, Reba, you heard that? Reba still lives.
Anyways, Chris knows her, so Chris can connect us if needed.
Oh, okay. All right.
What was her name again?
She might. Reba, R-E-B-A, Reba Brown.
Yeah, you guys, I'm actually, my mechanic just called, so I'm going to need to take this call. Yeah, but I'll be back on the line. I'll just switch over, okay?
Okay, she is taking a call. Okay.
I'll work through Chris and see what's her.
Okay. Yeah, because they have an event in Chicago in about, I guess, 28 or 29 days, so to speak. And I think, now, speaking of renovation, I think Chris mentioned, I don't know if he's back yet, but something about an innovation lab. Oh, okay. Chris, did you mention some while ago about the innovation lab?
Yes, sir. Innovation lab don't just need to be for the youth, though. It needs to be for everyone.
All right.
I don't know if you heard what I said, Chris, but if she wants me to stream my Lean IPR lectures, I'd be glad to do it. I can't travel to the event, but I'd be happy to stream it if it's still possible. And, of course, if it's not, maybe next year.
No, that's fine. Perfect.
No,
Carl,
I'm
just, you know,
you got to get in contact with him.
Carl, you mentioned that you've traveled to Finland?
Yeah, I was traveling to Finland since 2010. I haven't gone recently because of the pandemic. But I cannot wait to go back.
Right.
So I'm hoping to go back this year.
Now, is it, from your opinion, cost of living in Finland expensive?
It depends where
you're
at. For some
reason, I can't imagine them having a homeless problem.
They're pretty good. You know, I mean, in Europe, you know, they take care of their people, so... You know, even at the lowest level, you've got a place to live and food, you know, at a minimum. Now, I'm not talking luxury. You're not going to be living in some fancy condo or anything, but you will have a roof over your head and food on the table, because it is a social democracy, you know, which is in between pure capitalism and pure socialism. It basically tries to balance capitalism with socialism, and what they do is they have a minimum standard for everybody. Like, education is free in Finland. Everybody goes to, and what's interesting is you get to choose between vocational and professional, and there's no stigma. In other words, there's no stigma if you want to be a bartender or a waitress or a carpenter versus want to be a teacher or a lawyer or a doctor. And in fact, the schools are fully integrated, which means that you've got the kids that come from the lower levels of the society going to school with the kids that come from the upper levels of society. It's a very interesting culture. You know, they have a very low crime rate, highly, highly educated people. They have probably the best educational system, arguably, in the world. Their system is interesting because the kids don't get any homework, which American kids would be very happy about that. They actually get to play every day for an hour and a half. And the Finns actually believe that the kids learn better through sort of self-pacing and sort of learning on your feet. You know, so for example, they get technical writing in elementary school. They get gardening in elementary school. So the kids know how to grow food, you know, they know how to write. I've been working with startups from all over the world, and the Finnish startups, or the people from Finland, head and shoulders above every single startup that I work with, just in everything. Their technical ability, their attention to detail, their action, you know, like with many other clients, I'm constantly waiting on them to get back to me. the Finns, they're constantly waiting on me because I'll send them an email and like the next day they're like, okay, here's my comments. When are we doing this? And I'm like, hey, we still got a couple weeks, you know? So, yeah, the Finnish people I love very, very, very much. And it's actually one of my goals to have a little house, a lake house in Finland with a little sauna, you know, next to the lake. And they're affordable when you get, you know, back to your question, when you get out into the, you know, outside of the main cities. And I would recommend that because the little towns are beautiful. They're little college towns. Every town has a local university, and you can ride your bike or there's public transportation or you can walk. The Finnish people walk a lot. I mean, they'll walk 20, 30 minutes, you know, a day, and that's nothing for them because they're just used to it. And I'm talking in minus 20 degree weather. So they're a very, very resilient people. So anyways, that's my little spiel on Finland.
Well, I was just reading about Finland. Finland, they have a low homelessness rate. I think they have a target year where they, which is coming up on it, where they'll probably, I mean, they'll probably have near homelessness or, I mean, zero homelessness. And then
well,
I understand Japan's got probably the, yeah.
You know, you talk to the Finns and you know, when you talk to the Finns, you know, that statistic gets argued quite a bit also that they're the happiest people on earth. You know, a lot of people rate them as that and also with the homeless problem. But when you talk to the, you know, to Finns that are actually on the ground, they will resist, and I'm not sure why, but they'll say, for example, that on the homelessness thing that, you know, the stats are kind of moved around, if you know what I'm saying, in other words.
Right.
But, yes, relatively speaking, you know, it's not like Washington, D.C. You know, we're like orders of magnitude worse than the worst part of
well, they
Finland,
have this thing
I would
called,
argue.
Yeah, I was just reading, they have this thing called housing first. That's, I guess, their strategy for eliminating or at least reducing homelessness. House the person first. How's that working
they
out?
Do that. Well, it's working, you know, because like I said, you know, in Finland, even when you have nothing, you have something. You know, you have food on the table and you've got a roof over your head. Now, you know, for people that are, you know, the anti, you know what I'm saying, like handout people, they're not living in luxury, okay? It's not like they're getting a mansion and you know.
Yeah, wasn't
you know,
that the case with, oh, man, maybe I can get him in here tomorrow. Because with the Soviet Union, everybody had a place to stay, but it wasn't, you know, it was like bare minimum, you know, surrounding.
That's what it is there. Yeah, I mean, if you're on the system, right, you're living, you
right.
know, you're living in sort of what we would call here tenements, I guess is the equivalent, you know, I'm talking low rent apartments, you know, that's where you're going
right.
to be. However, even in that situation, you have full access to all the universities and all the best high schools and everything. So that's what they do differently. Is that in their system, just because you're on the lower end of the scale of, you know, of the poverty scale, it doesn't mean that you don't have access to universities and jobs and everything. So, you know, they're very conscientious about trying to help their people. Now, one thing I will say about those systems, there's a hell of a lot of bureaucracy. You know, like I was trying to get paid over there when I was lecturing at the university, I had to go through three different departments, you know, to get my my pay authorized. But other than that, you know, I think, you know, those systems have their pros and cons. But, you know, here we have a system where we've got veterans sleeping on the streets and dying, you know, at 22 per day. We've got Washington, D.C. You know, there's parts of Washington, D.C. that's like a tent city, you know. You walk by D.C., and you know you're from the area, L.A., so you've been – I don't know if you've been back recently, but it's not uncommon to see people sleeping, like, right, you know, in the sidewalk during the day by buildings.
Oh, yeah, I saw that years ago. Yeah, they're sidewalk, and you see a grate. I guess some warm air is flowing up. Yeah, I've seen that. Does Finland have high taxation?
Yeah, you know, this is the interesting thing, and this is what, you know, the big argument, right? You'll have Americans saying, yeah, but the taxes are so high. Yeah, except that the tax money goes towards helping the people, and it does help. You know, they have incredible transportation system, incredible education system. They have a living wage, you know, which means that no matter what job you have, it has to give you what's called a living wage, and that means a wage that you can have an apartment and you know, where you can live with dignity, right? When you're not working, of course, you know, there's a minimum level that they give you, but it's not, it's like living in the housing projects, you know, except the Finnish equivalent of them. So, you know, it's not a perfect system, but I would argue it's a better system than what we're doing here. You know, where we're just sort of like one of your shows, you're talking about they're arresting homeless. That's how they're solving the homeless problem, of putting them in jail.
Yeah.
I would argue that our system is broken. I would argue that our system is broken mainly because of the fact that we have so much wealth, and at the same time, relatively speaking, we have so much disparity, you know, between the people that have something and the people that don't. Whereas in Finland, they're constant, like all wages are public knowledge. Like in Finland, you can look up how much any person in Finland makes. It's public knowledge. And every year they look at that gap and they try to make sure that gap isn't widening. Now, when it comes to housing, I was there for a conference and I walked through a park and I saw this tiny village of tiny homes. And, you know, they're like maybe,
right,
I don't know, 20 by 40 foot with a backyard and a little front yard. And there's, I don't know, maybe like 12 on one side and 12 on the other side. And that was the retirement community for the old people that didn't have a place to go. They had built them, you know, they'd given them a tiny home and a backyard, and they were all gardening in a beautiful park. So it wasn't like they put them out in, you know, this horrible part of the city. They were actually in this gorgeous park, you know, living with dignity. And you see them walking and hiking around. And this was government-provided housing, I found out later. So, you know, this is what we're trying to do with Chris. You know, I mean, this is the same model that we're talking about, you know, is let's start building, you know, tiny houses, you know, with a little backyard where people can grow food and a greenhouse, and let people live with dignity. And frankly, you can take all the money you're spending on food stamps and homelessness and police enforcement and incarceration, and all that money would be saved. You would actually be making money, you know, if you took all that money and actually applied it towards the problem. I think cities would see that they're actually making money rather than spending money on the problem, you know, and of course that's what Chris and I are trying to do with our team, is we're trying to build villages, you know, for housing and feeding homeless, and for me, of course, especially homeless vets.
Finland has a 56.95% personal income tax rate, but like you said, it goes back into,
you know, I have to tell you sort of a funny story.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. There was a lawyer that I won't mention his name. He's an American lawyer, and he was highly conservative. I'm talking like ultra right wing, right? Complained about socialism and social democracy, and you know, equated it with communism, which is really ignorant. You know, social democracy is based on capitalism. It's not communism. Anyways, he moved his family to Finland to take advantage of the free education. So here's a person complaining about the United States and the handouts and blah, 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 right? And moves his family to Finland in order to take advantage of their education and their social structure. So, yeah, mm-hmm. The money goes towards something. Like, they have good infrastructure, they have good education, you know, they have a safety net for their people, you know, versus, you know, our situation, you know, where you have the haves and the have-nots, you know, and I would argue that their system is better in that respect. They're crushing us in technology, by the way, for all the, you know, everybody saying that the U.S. is the best at everything. Not true. I work with companies from all over the world, and the Scandinavian companies are eating our shorts. You know, Israelis also, they're highly, highly advanced in technology. So we really lost our foothold on that, you know, we need to do something about it. I've always said, you know, a society that doesn't educate its children is a society that's going to fail. You know, it has to fail. And unfortunately, in the United States, we've sort of ostracized education. You know, we say education is bad. It's bad to be educated. I would highly disagree with that. But for my education, I would have nothing. I would literally have nothing. So for the people that are saying education is bad, I think they're drinking the Kool-Aid. That's my own opinion, by the way, and for my own personal experience. Coming here as an immigrant with nothing, you know, and everything I have is because of my education.
I'm gonna do some more homework on Finland. Seems pretty interesting.
If you ever want to go, brother, I'll take you up to where I would recommend is the northern towns like Jyväskylä or Oulu. They're very little college mm-hmm. towns, and we'll have
right.
a blast. All my friends
well,
are
what form of government?
DJs and
what form of government does Finland have?
They're a representative government like many European governments, you know, where they have different, in our government, it's a one or a zero, right? Either you're a Republican or a Democrat, and you know, the winner takes all, right? Which leaves half of the people sort of upset every year or every 4 years. In Finland, they have what's called a representative type of government, you know, where they have different, lack of a better term, factions. And you know, mm-hmm. depending on how many votes they get, each faction gets a certain percentage of the say in what's happening. So it's more it's more of a representative government than what we have here, which is a dualistic. You know, we have you're either red or you're blue, right? And take your pick.
Right.
So yeah.
Well, all right. Well, we're gonna end it here for today. We'll be back tomorrow.
Thank you for sharing.
So everybody have. Thanks for sharing that. I'm gonna bring in a guy if he's available tomorrow. A guy that lived in the Soviet Union for a while.
But there we're talking communism, right? Which is pretty bad.
Yeah. He was over there during the and the government and people had the basics, but they weren't the greatest living conditions.
No, I think that's
and
a horrible
I imagine
system,
that's why the Soviet Union broke up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, anytime you have to build walls to keep your people in, you know, I think there's a problem, right? You know, when you're afraid of people leaving, you've got a problem.
That's true. Well,
that's normally when you have a problem to wind up behind those walls.
Say again,
but
Chris.
When it gets put upon them. I said, most people, you know, when they have a reason that they get behind walls, not just because they're alive.
Mm. That's how much.
All right, well, let's pick back up. We'll pick back up on this tomorrow. Everyone have a great rest of the day.